Hello and welcome to the very 288th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, the podcast about games, board games, and the people who love board games.
Wow, 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 indeed.
And we're going to be talking about some games that we haven't played for a little while. We're going to be doing something that I like to think of putting on those really long rubber gloves that people wear for chemical spills and putting our arms into the gloopy, still warm memory bin of our collective minds.
The memory tub. We're going to put our arms in there and feel what lumpy pieces of memory are jaggedy enough that we can grasp them, dredge them out,
exactly,
and tell you about them.
And you know what? We're not even going to give a run order for this podcast. We're just going to be pulling out these little nuggets of memories one at a time and talking about a big list of games that we played in an order that we ourselves do not currently be aware of that much.
Normally, we do like a rundown of the games we're going to talk about on the podcast. This time, it's all soup.
I'd say the gloves are off, but they're not. The gloves are very much on because we do not know what memories we may uncover.
Matt, I want to talk about Epona first.
Well, that's your right. You've pulled it out. I can see there's a tiny memory of a pony in your grubby, grubby hands.
It's actually quite a large memory of a pony.
My gosh, this is a confusing memory for me. It's confusing memory because I'm not entirely sure that it happened.
This is a horse game.
Yep.
But it's not a horse game like we normally talk about horse games.
What do you mean, the one horse game we talk about? Hundreds of horses.
And Winning Ticket,
Long
Shot the Dice game,
okay,
and Winner's Circle. We had a whole thing the other day talking about horse games.
I forgot about those. I don't think of them. You're going to laugh at me. But I don't think of those as being horse games. I think of those as being horse racing games.
Okay.
And horse racing games, I feel like horses are only tangentially involved in when they're fictional games.
Sure.
Whereas the only real horse game in my heart up until this point is Hundreds of Horses.
But
a game truly about horses.
What about what it means to be a horse?
About what is a horse? What's in a horse's eyes? Who can ever really truly know or love a horse? However, this is not about that. This is about a different side of the horse. The mechanical side. The money side.
This is about acquiring as many horses as you can possibly get your mitts on.
Whatever means necessary. Including breeding.
Yes, there's a lot of that in this game.
There is.
There's a whole lot of horse breeding. There's a whole lot of making little fields for them to run around in. I have fuzzy memories of this game. Well, I have vivid fuzzy memories, like a sort of pom-pom.
Yeah.
This is a kind of strange, unusual tableau building game that me and you had a real headache playing in a great way.
Yes.
You're essentially the sort of main action of this game is you're assembling this giant like scoring grid of different horses.
Mm-hmm.
You have these stables that you're going to put out onto the table that have certain requirements, like this stable needs a white horse and a purple horse. That's like their symbol. They're not like actually purple.
That would be cool though.
That would
I'd like that.
So
but no, this is very realistic.
And then there'll be a section that's like, oh, and you get points for having saddles here. And then there'll be horses that score differently depending on what other symbols you have. It's just getting symbols in a big grid and scoring them all together and horse points.
And like, you know, you're getting points for filling up the stables properly. But then also different stables have different, like, you know, capacities.
Yes.
So you could get a stable that can fit five things.
Oh my God.
But then you get a stable that just fits two things.
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't know what to do with this stable. Should I put a horse in it or should I put a man in it?
Or a carriage.
Yeah. So many options.
You have different kinds of horses. You got horses for racing that you put riders on and they get you points. You have horses for working where you can attach them to a trailer and then you can drive around and get points.
Horses for beef Findus lasagna. That's a throwback.
But I think the reason this game is sort of a fuzzy memory to me is because most of what I kind of remember of it was just crunching very hard.
Oh my.
We sort of started playing the game and then we just said the word horse to each other a lot and then I needed to go and have a lie down.
We thought we were going to have a jolly time.
Yeah, we did.
And I think I went into it very much just laughing at horses. And
because they're funny.
And all of the horse tiles and the idea that we could be breeding horses.
Yes.
Both internally and externally.
Yeah.
Which... That sounds odd now I've said that. There's lots of adjectives you use around the term breeding that I guess sound a bit funny. But yeah, basically you could you could breed with other players' horses if you wanted to.
Yeah.
If it was desirable for both of you, I guess.
Yeah, and then, you know, if you manage to breed your horses, you get extra points for that. I keep saying everything just ends in points, basically. Like,
yes.
It's just a big get as many points as you can by building a really, like, cohesive tableau. And then the core action of it is this kind of, like, I cut, you choose mechanism where mm-hmm. you're taking a bunch of cards, you're putting them in little bins, you're offering to your opponent, hoping that they're going to pick the one that has all the bad horses in.
Yeah.
So all the good
but
horses.
But then it becomes like the nature of the game really is initially it all seems like a fun time with just a few horses and just a few things. But because the tableau you're building is this sort of downward exploding tableau,
yes.
Which then is heavily based on adjacencies.
Yeah.
It yes. becomes quite rapidly a bit difficult and hellish in terms yep. of going, okay, well, am I going to add a new stable this round, which will give me a new like row of things I can place?
Yeah.
But then everything you place is locked in. Mm-hmm. And if you filled stuff earlier, then you can't change that.
Yep.
And then some of the tiles are going to give you bonuses for like just the left. Some of them are going to give you for the right. full row.
Yeah, you'll get things that are like for every saddle in the column, get this many points.
Yep.
For every foal in the eight spaces around you,
yeah.
get some points.
Yeah.
And that's where the kind of like stringing.
That's where the madness starts to creep in.
It really
where you
does.
Think, oh, I'm going to get loads for that. And then you realize, no, I'm not. I've only got one foal there. What happened to my foal plans? And you go, oh, yeah, but then I started collecting these salesmen that had suitcases or something. And now my it's full of men with suitcases. Where are my horses?
Where do my beautiful horses go?
And then you go, oh, it's fine because I'm going to get 2 points for every pair of these symbols on my board. And you think, well, I forgot to get so many of them and I only get 2 points.
Ah! It's also like such a busy tableau to look at as
busyness
well. There's so
is
much iconography.
Like, I think that this was a game where I realized early on that it would work so much better if we had like augmented reality.
Yeah,
because I feel there was so much art on all of these things and so many symbols that I wanted to be able to like hover my finger over one of the little like circles and to have
yes.
all of the other ones like pop out almost.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
so much of it was about trying to work out like, well, what of those do I have?
Yeah,
and trying to find them and remember where things were
is kind of hellish.
It was kind of yeah.
Yeah, you need like Board Game Arena style like tool tips on everything, I think, to be like, you
yes.
have X amount of the wheel symbols and they're all over here.
You need that thing where like everything kind of fades out and all of the colors drain out of everything apart from the pink circles that have a picture of like that type of horse in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because without it, towards the end of it, very exhausting. But I kind of enjoy that, you know. I think that sometimes there's this feeling that, you know, a game about rearing and breeding horses and having lots of nice horses and doing things with them, you might automatically assume that a game like that would have to be very simple because
right.
it's a game that's for like more casual audiences.
Yeah.
And we definitely have like, you know, within culture completely, we have ideas of like, this is going to be a hardcore thing. Oh, this game looks like
sure.
Dark Souls.
Right.
Not going to be a walk in the park then,
yeah.
is it?
Yeah.
Whereas like, oh, this game has got like ponies in it, so it's going to be
easy
and fun.
Right.
And I think to a degree, like that's actually like dumb
uh-huh.
and like actually like socially probably not very good for the world in a way of like,
sure.
you know, you even those two examples, right? There's like an inherent gendered suggestion there of
sure.
being like, oh, this is clever. This is dumb.
Right.
Like, and the way that like, I think there are people who like to play games that are simple, but they hate twee stuff.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
want to play something a bit more meaty and dark,
gotcha.
But that's simple to play.
Right.
And vice versa. I uh-huh. think, you know, I think it's fun that maybe if you love horses, but you also want to melt your brain, then
this
is cool.
The game for you.
But for everyone else, it's just a horrendous trap.
Yeah.
Because it's called Epona.
And I was like, we're going to have a nice time sat down, breeding some horses, like getting some stables, having
just
a
set
nice
the stage.
Cozy
like,
time.
We have it's just like towards the end of the weekend at
yep.
PAX Unplugged, we've come to the area where we can play board games that we have not played.
Yep.
We're both pretty frazzled for having done a weekend of socializing, hanging out with people who like our work. And if that's any of you, if you bumped into us at that show,
thanks.
Thank you so much. I love going to that show. I love talking to people at that show.
It's
always
great.
Have the best time.
It's lovely.
Brilliant time. But pretty fried. We just want a nice, relaxed time.
Mm.
Tom says, look at this. We both laugh. It's a picture of a nice looking horse. It's a game where you get tiles with horses on them and put them in. We thought we were going to have a nice time.
We were going to be chill.
As it was, the game seemed pretty good. Actually seemed more complicated than I would have liked.
Yep.
Not for a game about horses. Just more complicated than I would have liked. Full
for
stop.
Anything.
Like, I don't know if I want to play it ever again because it was kind of too hard for me.
Yeah. I think this is you know, you've worked out the Venn diagram of who this is for. It's for the crunchy gamer who wants a kind of twee nice theme about horses.
Yeah.
That's
or for like, you know, if you have an 11-year-old niece who you secretly think might be a savant, but only wants to do things involving ponies, maybe a little trap, maybe a little trick.
Maybe set them a little
maybe
trap.
Just set it up on the table. And then, you know, if they start going big brain mind palace, you're like, I told you.
Got
I em. Told you they were a genius. And then, I don't know, they go to Harvard or something. I don't know. I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
But those are the two people it's for.
Should we talk
Pretty
about?
Cool.
Should we talk about another game?
Yeah, go for it.
What do you want to choose from big smorgasbord?
I'm gonna briefly tell you about a game that I played very briefly. Ooh, I played a new version of Joyride that's coming out in a bit.
Yes.
Joyride Full Throttle.
Full Throttle.
And I'm just not gonna little teaser for this because you reviewed the original Joyride game.
I did. I really liked it.
And you really liked it.
It's delightful.
It's a really good game.
Still got it.
I've played this version of it, which is like a 2.0, I'm thinking of, and it felt very similar in a good way.
Good.
But I liked it, and I think it could be better in the fact that I just felt like they'd done a few tweaks to things.
Right.
And I wasn't super familiar enough with the original to be able to tell you exactly, but it felt like they'd done stuff to make the game more punchy.
Okay.
More like interactive.
Okay.
Like there was a simple thing, like there was a type of like, you know, instead of just firing a rocket ahead, it was like you fire a rocket ahead and if it doesn't hit anything, it bounces off and keeps moving until it does hit something of thing. Like it's going to hit either an obstacle or a person. Lots of things like that. So when you have these items, these Mario Kart style items that you pick up and use, it felt like they kind of understood that maybe in the base game, they were a little situational where you had to kind of go out of your way too much to try and do something with.
Sure.
Or you were using them in a way that was like just to get rid of them so you could get something new. Just stuff like that. It felt like it was a little bit more...
Wacky. Right.
But not like turbo wacky. Just a bit more like... things that will actually do things.
I think that's because what I like about Joyride is I think that it has, the first few times I played it, it came across as being very, very silly. Like it's a game where you sort of pit maneuver someone and now they just have to drive directly into a wall for the mm-hmm. next two turns. And like you have people reversing, you have people doing all these kind of weird spins and stuff. And it's just like a very daft time. But the more of it I played, the more close the races began to get. The more people were using the systems to not necessarily like drive their opponent completely off the track and spin them round, the more they were using them to just gently nudge people off course and gain these little edges.
Yeah.
And like the core of the way that the sort of dice rolling, gear shifting, risk management works, I think is really sharp.
Yeah.
And I'm a little wary of if they just want to go crazy Mario Kart style.
I don't think it was crazy Mario Kart style. It just felt like there was some little nudges here and there that were just like making it a little bit more like you could do cool things.
Okay,
of being like, you know, oh, I've got a rocket, but I'm miles away from anyone. Like maybe you can still work out a way of doing something.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe you can still do something.
Walls, yeah.
Also, there was like some shopping trolleys that got span around and stuff. So there was basically like more things on the course that were not like hard, like, this is an obstacle and more things that could be pushed around.
Oh, that's fun.
And stuff like that. Like,
yeah, more interactions like that that don't directly lead to like your opponent driving into a wall, having a bad time, and more just like create little pockets of things to navigate.
Exactly. That's too early to say exactly, but it feels like it could be, if they kind of, you know, fleshed it out and done it right in all the ways, that it feels like it could be the same as like almost like to Dune Imperium to Dune Uprising.
Okay,
of just
okay.
like something that actually, if you had the two versions side by side, you might be like, is this kind of the same game?
Yeah.
But like maybe just some slight improvements here and there.
Oh.
And I made me think, oh, want to keep an eye on.
You
but
reminded
that's
me that Dune Imperium Uprising exists and I want to play it.
Right.
Like, immediately.
Right. What
it's
a game.
Good game.
What a game.
Should we do our little oink buffet?
Yeah.
Our mini buffet inside of the rest of the buffet?
A mini buffet of oink. Oh, oink, oink, oink.
Which one
little
first?
Bacon-wrapped fun.
Should we do the one? Well, we've both played all of these.
We have.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I played Petticat, Matt.
Yep.
And I have nothing to say about it.
Wow, yeah.
I'm going to take a vow of silence.
Did you play that with me?
No.
Cool. No, I'm glad because I didn't really like it.
Okay.
And like, if we played it together, then I feel like I'd feel less confident about that because maybe the game was just bad, you know, but
right.
I didn't like it that much.
No, I think it's like, I don't know. So I can't remember exactly like what the turn by turn is, but you're trying to, there'll be like a sequence of pets wearing hats yes. in the middle of the table, and then you will kind of provide what you think should be the next in sequence.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone has like a perfect hand of cards, effectively, in terms of like everyone has the same set of things. You yeah. have all of the different cats and dogs and a duck, I think, which yep. have three different colors of hats on.
Yeah, and then you get... they're wearing three different kinds of suit or something like that. Or
it's
numbers.
Different kinds of hats.
It's
and
numbers, hats, and pets.
Yeah, so it's numbers, hats, and pets.
Yeah.
So you look at it and it might be like a five with a red hat dog, and then a three with a yellow hat cat, and yep. then et cetera. And then you have to work out what is the next animal, number, color, hat in the sequence.
Yes.
And then the idea is that everyone then bets on this by like secretly marking a thing, and it had a cool little card that sort of acted like a two cards that acted like a spinner. It's quite a cool bit of engineering. Yeah. It's hard to describe on the podcast, so I won't, but it was a way of like basically creating a little cardboard spinner just using two pieces of card.
Yeah,
it was quite neat. But then you all decide, and then you reveal, and the idea is you just want to be aligned with somebody else.
Yeah.
You want to have somebody else who agrees with you on exactly, yeah, I thought it was the blue hat dog four as well, because yeah. I didn't like this game, though. I thought it, I really didn't like it.
No.
And I didn't like it because I initially thought, this is fun, vibes, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, what do I feel is right? And it, I thought it was going to be like the mind of like, I just feel like this. But somebody around the table, and I don't think it's their fault, they explained after the first game why they'd chosen what they'd chosen.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, I was like, well, the point of the game is to just match with someone. So
right.
I knew how they were doing it, like
I'm
their
just
system.
Think about it like
so
they
I just
will.
Every time just went, well, I'm just going to do what they're doing.
Right.
And I could just really easily work out what their logic was.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, what are we doing here now? Like, it's just like, and I was like, all right, fine, whatever.
I had a sort of similar problem where we sort of played it just based on vibes, which I think is kind of the spirit of the game,
yeah,
but that it doesn't necessarily reinforce that spirit in its actual mechanics. But we were playing it just based on vibes, and the problem was every time we would all reveal a completely different thing, and then everyone would explain why they picked what they picked, and everyone went, well, that's very reasonable, actually. And I think the game wants you to be like, in theory, the game is like, no, it has to be this way, or whatever, and like, have like a discussion that's like, no, this is the right way to think about
it. Well, that's
it.
What I mean. I found it interesting in terms of going, oh, we've all looked at this in very different ways. Fascinating.
That's
but then,
interesting.
Because you get points by matching with someone, it's like, you do that, and then from that point onwards, you just choose one of the players around the table, and you stop doing what the game wants you to do in terms of like, what do you think? And you go, well, no, there's no point in what I think.
Yeah.
Somebody,
we're just going to all do one thing, and then everyone benefits.
Somebody has to give up what they think. In order to win the game, somebody has to be, either you have an alignment, you go, oh, we just both think about it the same way, or you have to go, no, I'm going to forget about my feelings and work out, look at these animals through the eyes of someone else. Just weird.
Just weird. I think it's a bit of a miss.
I felt nothing about it as well. I was just like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
I'm good.
It's very activity-like.
Yes. Next up on the activity-like, I think a shoot and a miss, was Rig or Roulette, which on paper, I should have loved.
God, I really wanted to love it because everything about it is so me. I don't know. Like, the writing in the game is like, put your hands into the big wet mud and pull out an eel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a snake, though.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm into this. There's a bag you pass around the table. You greedily plunge your hands into the dirt and pull up fistfuls of eel, snake, uh-huh. worm things. I'm in.
Yeah.
And then the game was completely fine.
Completely fine. It was just a weird thing of like, sort of push your luck, but not really.
It's kind of like collective push your luck.
Yeah, it was an odd thing where like you all reveal what you've got, and then basically, you know, you want to pull out lots of eels, but not snakes, I think.
Yeah.
And
eels are worth points. Snakes are bad. The table's collective count of snakes is the kind of push your luck element.
And then if you hit a point where it's like, oh, we've gone over the limit of how many of those we're allowed to pull out collectively, then the people who have the most things lose them.
Whoever pulled out the most eels that round, I think, is the
thing.
So it's like, you might actually get away with like being really I mean, I could be wrong. Citation needed. This is a fuzzy memory zone.
Yes.
But like, you could have pulled out tons and tons of the dangerous snakes early on.
Yep.
And then you're not punished for that because you just keep pulling like one from then on.
Yep.
And someone else has to risk it, and then they get shafted.
Yeah, I don't know. It was odd. We played it with quite a large group, and I feel like it's a sort of thing where maybe if you played it with a much smaller group, there might be something there. But I just couldn't really find a game there.
No,
it felt very random.
And it was so, I think for being as random as it was so slow.
Yeah.
Like, it took a long time for that bag to like get past. Around
yep.
And also it felt so arbitrary because in the first round everyone just pulls the maximum number of eels they can pull out of the bag. They just
yep.
pull a big fistful, and then the decisions start happening, and
yep.
it's like, well, why not just dish everyone out 5 at the start.
And I think especially off the back of playing something like Magical Athlete, which goes out of its way to give each player their own dice so that the game is just constantly like... having something where you are ostensibly all having fun pulling worms out of a bag, it didn't feel like that. It didn't feel like I was having fun pulling worms out of a bag.
I think it's because the motion is like everyone pulls stuff from the bag and then you all reveal. Whereas if it was more bit by bit and it was like everyone's paying attention to when each player is individually pulling stuff out of the bag, that would have been more exciting. But really, it's like there's just one moment that happens like 5 times and the game is over.
Kind of reminded me of that old Oink game we talked about ages ago. Was it Moneybags?
Moneybags.
Which again, like on paper, you think, oh, this is cool. But then you realize, like, I don't know, it's kind of arbitrary. Like how many do you think they pulled out of the bag? I don't know. It's impossible to say. So I guess we'll just, I don't know. And also it would be like, again, arbitrary in terms of like somebody would pull out tons of things and like get lucky and not have any of the bad ones because they're the same shape thing.
Yeah.
And then someone else would play really cautiously and then pull out loads of them. And it was like, just whatever, you know?
Yeah.
No,
big miss. Another
again,
big point.
I think just an activity, but an activity I should have enjoyed more. I don't know what happened there. However, the final one, I think, in this three, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
Pick and Packers.
Pick and Packers. This is a game about being a drone operator. You have to play it in pairs.
Yep.
Delivering presents Christmas style.
Yep.
You have this little chunky bit of wood that is the drone that you will hold with one finger only.
Yeah, two players basically press one of their fingers against either side of it and then lift up the presents on them and must move the drone. You're basically Santa's like electronic drone.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of different cards on the table that represent like landing pads, and then each turn you'll kind of move the landing pad around and you have to pick up a present from each one, and then you stack the presents on top of each other. So not only are you having to push your fingers onto this single bit of wood to delicately hold this drone afloat, but now you've got a big wobbling stack of presents on top. Oh no.
And the thing is that you get off. It's just silly. Like some of them are like quite large bits of wood, other ones are little like folded bits of card that make presents, and the order you have to pick them up in is completely determined by random.
Yep.
And you know, you look at it and you go, well, that's impossible.
And the other two players are betting. So the way that you get points is just by delivering a bunch of presents. You and your partner, if you can deliver presents, if you can pick them up, then you get points. The other players get points if they bet correctly how many deliveries you can make.
Yep.
Which is very funny because there'll be these like very obvious points in which they're like, yeah, there's no way they're going to be able to do that. But then there's also an interesting thing because the way that you bet, you can't bet the same number as someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have these situations where someone, like, it's really obvious that they're going to make 3 deliveries because the third thing they have, the fourth thing they have to pick up is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to bid 2 or 4 because the other person took 3.
Yep.
And you're just willing them to be like, no, please don't mess this up.
Willing them to either not mess this up or willing them to really mess it up.
Just really, really screw it.
Also, I found it very funny when we played it, the fact that, like, you know, it is that lovely kind of unknowable task, right? Like if somebody says to you, I think it's like an egg and spoon race, right?
Right.
Because you don't generally run around holding spoons with eggs in them. I feel like most people are going to have a pretty inaccurate idea of how good they'd be at it.
Right.
Right. You're like, oh, I think I couldn't do that, or I think I could probably do that.
Sure.
In reality, you've got no idea.
Right.
Because you just don't do it.
Yeah. And looking at other people doing it, you're like, yeah, I could do that.
Exactly.
And then you do it and it's horrible.
It's like, you know, I've got a feeling that I kind of feel like I could fly a helicopter just on vibes. I definitely can't. But I've had that feeling ever since I played GTA 3 for the first time. And I just feel like I probably can. Anyway, it's similar to that. And it means that what I loved about it is, you know, we'd be like ready to do it. And then everyone's bets come in and we feel pretty confident about it. We're like, I think we could do 4 or 5 deliveries on this combination.
Yeah.
Those things look like they could stack. We could do this. And then everyone else is like, you're going to do 1. Yeah. You're going to do none. And like more than often, they're right. And everyone's just going, you know what? We think you're going to be terrible at this.
There's like, you could do, I can't remember how many it is, but maybe it's like 9 or 12 deliveries.
Nine's
no
the best.
Way anyone is doing that many.
I thought about that and I thought about this a lot. And I think that people will do 9. You know who'll do 9?
Sickos.
Kids. This is the sort of thing where like, if you had this and you played it a lot, I reckon kids, specifically out of spite and drive, kids I think could become incredible at this.
You know, there's a little promotional thing that I got that was a drone, but it has 3 little divots, so 3 people can pilot the drone together. That's so sick.
That sounds impossible.
Even though I do like Pick and Packers, I don't think it's like a top tier Oink game. I think in terms of like where we're stacking these in the Oink canon, I don't think any of them are gracing any higher than like
it's such a hard C-tier. Thing though, right? Because this is the problem is like the really, really good ones are just like really like good capital G games.
They're just
right?
incredible.
Like, whereas like, I think this is a top tier Oink activity.
Okay.
Because some Oink games are just like card games and some Oink games are just like silly little things you get out of boxes and have a go at. And I think as a little box that is something silly and fun that you can crack out after people have had a few drinks or at the end of a long day when you're traveling, I think it's a very fun thing. And I really enjoy the combination of bravado, of having it so that you are, if you were in teams the whole time, it would suck. It would be miserable. But because the teams are constantly rotating around, so now it's me and you and they're bidding.
Yeah.
It means there's no real alliances. It has that like Cosmic Encounter style shifting walls of like, we're best buddies and now I hate you.
But in a way
that you always have two people who are like trying to be optimistic because they want to get points for doing well, whilst the other people are just going betting against you and going, you suck. Or thinking you can do it and being confident and then being annoyed that you've completely messed it up.
Bitterly disappointed.
I think that is just such a fun dynamic. And
you turn me around. That
I
is
also
a good part.
Think that when I played it, I couldn't help but make a little noise. Like, and I think that's a good sign of being like making the noise as you wibble
it around.
I think it's just stupid. I think like in the same way that you get like Oink games that occasionally are just like, you know, it's a bit of a mystery. Some Oink games you open it up and you go, it's a really solid card game in here, it's really beautifully produced. Other ones you open the box and it's like the equivalent of one of those spring paper snakes that comes out and it's just like, I'm here. I think it's my favorite of those ones,
really, because I feel like in the Oink, I think that, do you play Rafter 5?
I was going to say, I didn't mention it because I couldn't remember the name. I think Rafter 5 is better.
Can I hit you with another?
Yeah.
Dropolter.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I like Pick and Packers. I like it. But I think that, like, the best Oink game, like, I think Dropolter, like, you're right.
Yeah.
They're kind of divided into two categories, which are, like, actual really sharp game, like game design games, and then they have, and not to say that these aren't well designed titles, but they're sillier, they're fluffier, they're more like dexterity based and daft and frothy.
Yeah,
and in those I still think that I struggle to, this is obviously it's splitting hairs, you know, but
I think that I think they're different, and I think it's really interesting. I think that like Rafter 5, I think there is more game in there and more strategy. And I think Dropolter is fantastic and I love it. But I find Dropolter really stressful.
It's really stressful.
And I find it really frustrating when I'm not doing well. I also love that when I'm, it gets to a point when I'm doing so badly that I love it because everyone else is more stressed than I'm not stressed at all anymore. Because I've like given up. It's like that bit in Mario Kart where you're in eighth place and you know what? I'm going to start driving backwards.
Just for fun.
I'm going to try and shoot cell shells at people going the right way. You're like, what are you doing? You're like, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. It's a bit like that. Whereas I think I like about Pick and Packers is it's like it's endlessly like, because you're always being paired up with somebody different and trying. It's like you don't feel like the responsibility is all yours.
I love it,
you know?
In that game when you're like, you know, you're playing and you're like, well, I'm good at the game and my partner let me down.
Yeah.
And then later on, you're like, that person seemed like they were pretty good in their partnership. So when we're on a team, we're gonna do so well.
Yeah,
and then you play with them and then you're like, wow, they were terrible.
Yeah, like you just don't know, right? It's like, it kind of allows you to just like,
I wonder where the problem is.
I feel like it's lovely in the fact that like, it's a game which really encourages you to like want everyone else to fail. But then the failures, it's impossible to ever blame anyone. So I think it's nice. I think that's why I like it. The fact that like, you can be playing Dropolter and you can be looking around the table and you can going, that person sucks at this. And that person might be having a really miserable time because of it. But with this, it's like, no one can really tell. Like, you can always have the sense that like the other person should have pushed harder on the other side of the piece
of
wood.
Right.
But maybe you should have pushed less. I don't know.
Who knows?
It just happened. And now the drones crashed and the presents have exploded.
Very silly game.
I like it.
That's our Oink roulette. And finally, we played maybe the final boss of weird trick-taking games.
Yes.
We played This Is Not a Game About a Pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Which you cannot find on BGG.
Nope.
Because there was a sort of DMCA from the Magritte gang.
Yeah. Clicking their fingers as they walked into town. Yeah, they had a takedown on it. The House of Magritte,
which is
family.
Crazy.
Which feels, I don't know, somebody making a game about the piece of work with the whole point of the game. So to get into it, it's a card game which is like founded on the idea of the Magritte's This Is Not a Pipe.
Yes.
Which is, it's written in French. Underneath the pipe.
Beep.
The game effectively plays on that by having a trick-taking game where you are playing cards and the four suits of the game. And the four suits of the game are pipes.
Yep.
Cards.
Yep.
A trick.
Yep.
And winning.
Yes.
So you might play a five of winning.
Yes.
Or you might play a six of trick.
And you don't actually just play one card, you play two.
Yep.
Because you need to make a statement with your cards.
And the statement has to be true.
Yep. So if a pipe is never a pipe.
Pipe is never
a
pipe.
You always have to say, this is not a pipe.
Yep.
So if it is a pipe, then you are, that's not a valid play.
It's not a valid play.
If you want to play a card that's a card, it is always a card.
It's always a card, yeah.
So if you say this is not a card, that's not a valid play. It has to be a card. If you want to play a winning card, then it has to currently be winning. So the statement has to say, this is winning.
Yep.
Or if it's not winning, this is not winning to make it valid to
and
play.
And then the only way for a trick to be played, it always has to be, this is not a trick when played, unless you are the last person to play a card in the round, in which point that is now a complete trick, which means at that point you must have a card that says underneath it. The cards kind of slot underneath to make a little pipeline that says the statement.
To make a statement,
And really, like, you know, it's not very complicated to understand once you play it. You realize that all it is that each time you play the card you want to play, and then you tuck a card underneath it, and the card underneath it
has to
have a line on it that makes the statement true. And that's the only way. That it means whenever you play cards, you must make a true statement as part of the play. And that's the rule. Like, after that, it's not that complicated, really.
Right. I don't think it's complicated. Like, it's a bit brain-bendy to get your head around initially.
It's an absolute punch in the arse and face at the same time. It's a slap on the head. It's silly. And I kind of liked it for that. And the fact that really it is, like, continuing the idea of that, like the piece of art originally, of being like, this isn't a pipe, it's a picture of a pipe.
Yeah.
And being like, having players sit around a table and going, this is not a pipe, this is not a pipe, and going, this is a card, this is a card. And like, when you're trying to explain the game to people is my favorite thing, because it does. We had a to diverge briefly, at PAX Unplugged, we did a live show where we asked people about their crimes, as is normal.
Their board game crimes.
And one person had said that they'd started to teach a game to some people, and then halfway through the game had found themselves under the influence of something that they had done or taken. We had canned, I think, for the show that they'd been hit with a poison blow dart from out the room, and it wasn't their fault. Anyway, they found themselves suddenly unable to really explain the game properly, and having everyone else look at them like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
As they started doing it. I like teaching this game to people, because if you just teach it to them in a very matter-of-fact way, I feel like it gives that experience to other people.
Sure.
Makes other people think, have I taken drugs by accident?
Yeah. I must have misheard something. This is too weird.
Because it's just like, these are tricks, so I'm going to play a five of tricks, a five of cards, four of cards, a three of pipes.
Yep.
When you actually drill down into it, the game is not super complicated, and it actually has some fun wrinkles in the fact that the cards you put underneath, the suits of those cards are still important for scoring at the end of the game. So you're trying to like hide cards that people don't want because the pipes are bad at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So you're trying to kind of sneakily try and lose tricks whilst giving people bad cards and win them when you think you're getting better ones.
I think like I think it's such a funny game to teach, such a funny game to play, because, you know, even when you're playing it and you go, this is not a pipe, this is not a pipe, this is a card, and this is a trick. It's just like there's a weird rhythm to it that's quite funny. And like, it feels smart. It's not as complicated as you might think, but then I feel like the scoring is sufficiently complex that getting your head around the way that the statements things work combined with the scoring means it's very hard to know how to play well.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's funny how, like, you know, and I use this, there's probably a word that's better than this word, because this word feels too harsh, but I feel like it's smart in a way that's like just on the edge of smug.
Yeah,
in a way that, like, I'm like, okay. And at that point, I'm like, I don't say that to be like a massive detractor. And I think that it's an interesting game in the fact that I'm like, you know what? This is more of a curiosity for me. This isn't something I want to play. I'm glad it exists, but it's more of a kind of academic-y thing in a way of being like, it's a fun idea where somebody's explored the idea of this artist in a game. The game's all right.
Yeah.
But now even more so, like, in a way, it's like, now it is. It really is, like, because there's been some cease and desists. This was only a game that was available in a very, very small run.
Yes, at the Indie Game Night Market at PAX.
Where lots of designers make little like small runs of games that they self-publish and they're limited. And I think this is now obviously going to be very limited because the big Magritte gang have clicked their fingers and said, No! This is a DMCA takedown. and that's a shame, but at the same time, it's like there's something about the existence, non-existence of this product that in a way is kind of a perfect end to the story of the game. A fascinating, odd little thing.
Yeah, really. Curiosity is definitely the right way to describe it, I think. Just as a little extra sneaky mention of something that I'm going to chuck in.
I knew we would.
This is why I
described it as a big wet bin of memories, because I knew at some point one of us would go, I've just remembered a new thing.
Afterwards, we played No Loose Ends, and I think that was kind of like a little bit of an antidote as a less... Again, like I don't think that this is not a... This is not a game, a pipe game is truly pretentious, but I can see people describing it as such.
That's why like it's such a
it's
soft
a really smug. Hard
it's such a smidge of smug. It's not it's like I looked at it smug. And honestly, there are so many games I play. If that feels harsh, there are so many games I play where I think this is smug and pretentious, and I just never tell you about that because I don't want to hurt people's feelings.
Yes. But for the, like, as in a kind of antidote way, No Loose Ends was a much more straightforward, like, it's a trick taker with a twist, but it wasn't, like, absurdly hard to pass initially. Yeah. It was just, you have this thing where you almost set out cards from your hand to be, I am going to win this color or number of card, and then you have to cover up those by winning tricks that contain certain cards in them. And I just found that to be, like, a more immediate puzzle and kind of reset me to be like, because there's always
that
this
feeling.
That was
cool. I'd forgotten about that, actually. That
it's
was great. Cool.
It's really good. I want to play more of it. I think that'll probably be a big pod chat at some point when I play the game. Because I think it's very clean and sharp. Mm. But I think that kind of... I always get this worry when I play Trick Takers of like, well, has this, you know, this big fad, which is all of the Trick Takers have had this huge explosion, has it gone too far? Have we entered into the world of Trick Takers that are getting to that point of being a little too smug and actually no one can really play them properly because they're like so overwrought and overdone? And I think that No Loose Ends was a nice bringing back to being like, no, there's still loads of really exciting design happening in this space that doesn't require you to be an absolute genius to get through.
Mm-hmm. It's not like that kind of Renaissance painting style thing where people are like, look at it and it's like, well, to understand the meaning of this particular pheasant, you have to understand that, like, you know, whether every detail of it is like a reference to something else that you have to know about, etc.
Yes. But I do want to get to that point with trick-taking games because it would be funny.
Yeah, but at that point, you'll be playing trick-taking games remotely whilst you're up in a big opera house with those tiny little binoculars looking down and going, very good, please flip the four. And they'll flip the four and it will explode into a shower of balloons. And you'll go, of course.
A fine move.
Oh, I look forward to that day. It's going to be brilliant.
Me too. Thank you very much for bearing with us on this strange expedition into the big wet memory bin.
You know what? I thought that was honestly way more coherent than I was expecting.
That's true.
I think we can happily take off our big rubber gloves and burn them while smiling, because I think we did a pretty good job of dredging up those memories from almost 3 months ago.
Almost. That's ancient history. We can shake our normal hands, not covered in toxic memory goo.
And we can move on into a new year of new memories.
Of new games.
Ta-da-da!
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.